download that onto your computer.
Yeah, you just take it out. It's got a little USB thing down here, and you just put it right in.
Anyone want milk for you?
Oh, nothing. And you guys are old friends?
Yes.
From Arizona?
From Arizona. It goes back to our Doctor Who days.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, since 85.
Now, these are the original Doctor Who,
right? Exactly, yeah. Yeah, we've been following the new series as well, but, you know, big fans of the old series.
Right on. There's not a lot of Americans talking about the old series. We used to get it all the time up in Canada.
Yeah. It's such a small group of people. You either love it or you hate it.
Yeah. Yeah, as a kid watching it, it was a little intense for me.
Really?
Because I just wanted to watch the hockey, you know? And with only three channels, flipping back and forth over three channels, and Doctor Who keeps showing up. It's like,
I might as well watch it.
Just you tolerate it. Yeah, remember those days? Where were you born?
I was born in 64.
Oh, nice. Oh, look at all that.
Yeah, those are all the questions I have for you.
It's like a menu.
Now tell me again what you do during the day.
I work for the Nature Conservancy
right
here in San Francisco.
Right on. There's a lot to conserve here.
Yes, there is. Yeah. There's over 50 places. 52 places now in California. Where
beautiful parks and gardens and things. I think I'm supposed to be doing this film at the end of June that is filming just north of here, but I'm not sure if it's, he said it's 20 minutes or 2 hours north of here.
That covers a lot of ground.
Yeah. Because what's 2 hours north of here? Just like the whole Napa Valley thing?
Yeah. How far can you get in 2 hours going north?
Yeah, it's about Napa Valley. San Jose, possibly Monterey Bay, if you squeeze an extra hour out of it.
Right, but that's south.
South. Oh, yeah, yeah. But yeah, Napa Valley's about it.
Yeah.
It's pretty close to traffic in the weekends you go.
So it's beautiful up there. When you get out of the city, that's where you
I can't wait. They say it's just God's country.
This whole coast is beautiful up here.
Oh, yeah. Anything north of Cambria is... I like that. The rest is just L.A. and San Diego. San Diego's nice. I like that.
I went to school down there.
Where?
Army Navy Academy in Carlsbad.
Oh, wow. So not only you were an Army brat, but you went into the military.
Actually, no. I went into military school, but never had pursued a military career. Somewhere I jumped.
Now, isn't the whole idea behind the military school to sort of...
steer you towards it? Yeah.
But you didn't. No. You just got the education.
I got the education. That was the big thing I got out of it, was the education and the discipline side.
That and the what?
Discipline.
Oh, sure. So they still treated you like a military guy.
Yeah. You got up in the morning, you made your bed, you made sure your room was perfect, you all went to breakfast together, classes together, lunch together.
And that was 4 years? That was high school or college?
5 years, because it was 10th, 11th, 12th grade, and then 2 years of college.
Oh, amazing. Amazing.
My parents, people always ask me, well, did you do something wrong?
Right.
And no, I actually wanted to go.
Yeah.
I was just one of those odd kids that really enjoyed it.
Was that something that you just saw in your father and said,
I think so, because
really
he was a military man.
Yeah.
And that was like the path I wanted to go.
But you're all over that now.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm on my rebellious side.
Right. In San Francisco.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. What do you got for me, Jason?
Okay, I got a few sets of questions.
All right, cool.
So, because I'm planning on running them on a few different websites.
Nice. Okay.
So I thought we'd start with some monk questions.
Some what questions? Some
questions
hard ones?
About monk.
Oh, monk, okay.
I hope none of them are too hard.
No, okay.
Okay, how did you get the role? Did Tony Shalhoub ask you?
You know what? It was interesting. Because, remember the John Turturro character? His brother?
Yeah.
His sort of reclusive brother?
Right.
I never saw the episode. But I met them all. I mean, I knew Tony from Galaxy. But I met them on that role. They were considering me for that role.
Oh, wow.
So when I went in and sort of approached it from a real artistic kind of way. It was like a really wonderful audition with me. I think that sort of sparked something in them. Because then I think the next season they just said, do you want to do this? Yeah. And I hadn't really watched the show, so I didn't realize how poignant that character was. Because apparently, it was a glimpse into Monk's past before the trauma, right?
Right, which we hadn't really gotten before in any of his interactions at all.
Right. So that was pretty cool. But that's how it happened. Sort of like a two-step process.
Have you watched the show much since?
I don't watch much TV.
No time?
It's a choice I make. Because between the work and my kids and hockey season,
something's gotta give.
You know, plus all the good shows are on at 9 and 10 o'clock, and I'd like to be in bed. And if I try to watch a show that's intense, like The Sopranos or something like that, I tend to carry it with me, so I don't sleep. And if I don't sleep, I'm an asshole. You know? So I try to...
Did you get enough sleep?
I did, but you know, I was writing till midnight and I didn't realize that it was like so late. So I did get 8 hours.
That's good.
I won't be an asshole anymore. Even though I feel like an asshole.
How many kids do you have?
Two. Yeah. Yeah, he's the boy's 8 and the girl is 5.
Is the girl easier to raise?
You know what? Psychologically easier, but not in the moments easier. Because I sort of look at him and I realize that he is more of an extension of myself. So I feel the weight and that responsibility of like having to be a good example for him. And not that I don't with her, but I know she has her mother. To teach her all the things that I know nothing about, like earrings and makeup and nails and fashion and shopping. You know what I mean? So my time with her is just sort of spent just sort of hugging her and kissing her, as opposed to my son. Yeah. As opposed to my son, I have to be father. Say, you know what, dude, this is how we do things. This is, you know, this is how we deal with shit. Her, it's like, oh, mom will worry about it. Yeah. But she is much more temperamental and just, well, she's a girl.
She says she's more like you?
Huh?
More like you?
Yeah, I think so. I think when it comes to show, she is much more articulate and dramatic and expressive than he is. So maybe, who knows?
Getting back to Monk, do you have any interesting stories about what went on the set, or was it all pretty smooth?
You know what? The only problem that I remember was the damn dogs. Remember the episode where
the dogs?
Sort of like, the dogs.
Yeah.
They were the nicest Dobermans. So we spent more time trying to film it in a way that could maximize their aggressiveness. And me going, and the dog is like, you know, it's just like, they had this bark for like 2 seconds, and all of a sudden it's like, they're licking you, like, you know what?
I think I caught a couple of the scenes.
Yeah.
You don't always quite catch the aggressive side of the dog.
Yeah, it's sort of like,
and you're watching it, and the dog's running through the store, and he kind of slips.
Arm. Yeah, right?
And you feel sorry for the dog.
What a dummy. And I think the cut they actually used was me doing this. It's like, okay. And the fact, you know, that I got to hang out with Tony again and just sort of have this relationship with him in the character way, and plus the past that I've had with him.
That's something I saw really translate across the screen, that you two knew each other.
Yeah.
That there was a betrayal in the friendship.
Yeah.
And it really came across really well.
The coolest thing about Tony is that, you know, he's an old world guy. know. Mm-hmm. I think we share that. We have that immigrant mentality in a way.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I guess both your fathers would be from
right.
the old country.
Right. Yeah. Right. So we have that in common. That old.
You also both went to Yale.
And, right? And I knew him. I knew of him before. One of the greatest theatrical experiences I ever had was watching Rameau's Nephew at CSC in New York when I was like 23 or 24. And Shalhoub was doing it. And he was like the greatest actor and the greatest performance I'd ever seen up until that point. And I'm reading his bio and I go, oh shit, Yale School of Drama. Can I go there? So it was a combination of watching his performance and seeing David Alan Greer in an audition room, two of them together, sort of made me go, these are the greatest actors I've ever seen. I want to go to Yale. So I owe them a lot, for, especially Tony, because if you'd ever seen Rameau's Nephew, he was just like, he was so fucking good.
But what was it about his performance you think made
it
really stand?
If you know the play, it's a two-hander, and it's about, I guess, Rameau, some painter or something, during French past. I don't know the history of Rameau at all. But his nephew was a scoundrel and a cheat and a vagabond and a drunk and a whore. And when an actor gets to play all those things, he was having the best time. And his voice and his vocal range was just so beautiful, because it was like a whole... I remember this coughing fit that he has that lasted 10 minutes. And just how it built and what he did, and it would stop and he would go back again, and his physicality. It's just divine.
So you and he really seem to have
the manager picked him up,
a great rapport.
I think so.
During your scenes.
Yeah.
They were there this morning.
Do you attribute that just to having the past together?
Well, yeah. That's valuable homework. Mm-hmm. You know somebody and you already respect them and admire them for what they do. And what was the character's name again?
Joe Christie.
Yes. You know, the admiration he had for Monk and his ability to, you know, he's like a true gumshoe. He's like a true investigator.
Yeah, they asked you to reprise your role?
No.
No. Well, you have.
Maybe they know I'm busy.
Yeah. You do have a series of your own.
But it's sort of remarkable how so many people have seen that episode. They remember that episode. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of fans out there.
There are.
Incredible.
And I think I told you that that's one of the most popular guest characters they've ever had.
Incredible. Yeah, I don't get out much, you know, because there's a lot of traveling, a lot of time in the car, and going to San Diego and stuff. So I'm always surprised when people say, "Hey, I saw you on blah blah blah."
Sorry.
I go, "Oh yeah, that's right. That's what I do. People see it." I think it's a good place to come from.
Is that pretty much the only feedback you get for television roles? I mean, for a play, of course, you have the audience right there. And
yeah, I think that's the best that could happen, is when people say, "I appreciate what you do." That's the greatest.
Smile.
Now let's go back to Monk.
I think we covered that.
Would you consider returning? Oh yeah, I would consider it. Oh yeah, that would be great.
Okay. Where were your scenes filmed? We're just curious because we go and take pictures of where scenes.
Yeah, they have
filmed.
Their own lot, right? What was that? I don't know, but I know we ended up on the Universal lot. Because that whole diner.
Mm-hmm.
thing with the old partner was in a diner that's one of those old streamlined. And then we were in Simi Valley.
Yeah, that didn't seem very San Francisco.
Yeah, no, I didn't think so. Then Simi Valley, which I've never been to Simi Valley. The
That's where the shopping center was.
Yeah, the shopping center was. It's funny. All those years in LA, I've never been to Simi Valley.
It's funny to see a shopping center in San Francisco.
Right? There's no such thing, right?
You may get six cars in a parking lot, and that's about it.
There's got to be a... I mean, didn't it take place in some suburban part of...
Yeah, probably. That's the way I think of it.
Yes. Yeah, how does that feel when you know it's clearly not?
Let your imagination go.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
I tend to kind of try and fill in the gaps. Sometimes.
Right. That's what I love about this sitcom. They just have the stock footage in the beginning, and then they're in some stage somewhere.
Everybody knows it's a stage.
That's right. That's right. But that stock footage. When they did Hope and Gloria, we had that great stock footage of Pittsburgh. It's like Pittsburgh. Awesome.
Weren't you glad you didn't have the film there?
Well, you know, when we first did that pilot, it was in Philadelphia. So, you know, I sort of had an idea of a Philadelphia regionalism. And then the day we shot, we go, we're in Pittsburgh now. I can't just drop a regionalism. So I resorted to me.
That worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, what was the experience like working on Galaxy Quest?
What was that experience like?
Yeah.
Perfect. From beginning to end. Because it's not often where actors are allowed to do their work. Sometimes directors have such a strong vision of what they want.
Is that more true in films?
Yeah, I think so, because I think they're scared. They really just want to hold on to that vision. They're afraid to sort of let go and let all the elements come together. And I attribute the whole experience to Dean Pariseau, who was the director, who had this very laid-back attitude. He was brought on it late. I think it was... What's his name? He had just done Wild Wild West.
Kevin Klein.
No, the director on that.
Oh, the director. No, shoot. I'm such a fan of the old television series.
Harold Ramis, maybe? Somebody like that was supposed to direct it. He wanted Klein.
Okay. The
studio wanted Tim Allen. He said, no, I'm tired. I don't want to do it anymore. So right in the middle of it, they brought Dean in. Sort of started behind the eight ball. And well, maybe that's how he works all the time. But it was just sort of like, whatever you guys want to bring. Which allowed me to just be goofy and bring that guy in, and he said, great. So actors usually don't have that luxury.
Well, the nice thing about the Galaxy Quest was that the parody was spot on.
The writing was great, you know what I mean? It was such a good story. So everybody was having fun. There was not 1 ounce of drama going on. It was perfect.
There was nobody who thought they were bigger than everybody else.
And
he had a very big cast.
Yeah, and Tim couldn't do it. You know, I'm sure he was capable of being the prima donna, if anything. But Sigourney was there to keep him in check. And Alan was there to just remind everybody that there's a real fucking actor on stage. So everybody was like, huh. And even Tim had a wonderful sense of humor about it. He goes, huh, I guess this isn't a Tim Allen movie, is it? And you go, I don't think it is, Tim. And he realized it when he was actually a joy. But he had such humility about it because he realized that it wasn't his movie, that he had to interview, he had to meet the people. And then in the middle of the interview, he realized, oh, this isn't mine, is it? He realized, oh, and that just brought him right down. And I think to date, it's still his favorite thing that he's done.
You know,
it's funny you mention it, because if you think about the character, you know, he's the captain. He's supposed to fix it, and he's perfect.
Yeah, right.
And that's what he brought across in the character.
Right. Yeah.
It's my show.
Yeah. Right. Right, but not really. Yeah, it was all his brain and chills. I just remember him as Chill.
That's Daryl.
Daryl.
Daryl Chill. Yeah. Mitchell.
Yeah, Daryl.
Yeah, he had an accident. Right?
Yeah, he's like.
He's paralyzed. Yeah. Anyways,
when did this happen?
Years ago, maybe 7-8 years ago.
Just after he got
yeah.
the sequest.
Yeah, not much longer.
But he continues to act.
He sure does. And why shouldn't he? Yeah.
All right, let's go to Veronica Mars.
Okay.
Which is my, well, it's kind of not my second favorite series. It shares it with
me. Oh, right.
As the star of the series, well, co-star of the series, you get a lot more control. You get input into the character.
Not really. Rob is pretty clear-minded. He knows what he wants. You know, he's already broken half the series, half the season for next season. You know. What he is open to is problems that might come up, just like just the difficulty understanding a plot line or a history point. But he won't tell you who the killer is. He won't tell you how much you know. He just sort of, you know, it's all on a need-to-know basis.
So when did you find out who the killer was this season?
Oh, when I watched it.
You didn't know that.
I read that last episode. Got to the part where I died in a plane crash, and I went, I'm not going to read anymore. I gotta find out. But then they said, keep reading.
I don't want to spoil for you, but he doesn't die.
Oh, right.
Oh, okay.
But I won't tell you the killers in case I can get you to watch it.
I was so surprised by it. It's very cool. Yeah, I can't talk about it. You can also...
Oh, no, go ahead, guys. Sometimes the information doesn't always reach the end point when I start watching it anyway.
Right. I'm on autopilot, too.
Yeah.
No, for some reason with the Monk, I get spoilers all the time. You find out what's going to happen.
Oh, you do?
Before it happens.
Oh, nice.
And Veronica Mars, I try to avoid it entirely because it really would kind of spoil
right.
the show for you.
Right.
It's like Twin Peaks on the last season or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole season is around a big mystery.
Okay.
But what they're going to do next year is have two or three big mysteries throughout the year. So there'll be like a 6 or 7 story plot line, a 4 story, a 4 episode plot line instead of just.
So there'll be several stories within the big umbrella theme.
Yeah. In the past, it's been one big mystery.
With the separate ones for each episode.
Yeah.
Why do you think they decided to go that direction and kind of
just to spice it up, make it a little more interesting. It's hard to write 22 episodes and having to keep including bits of
not
bits
just
of
22 episodes, but you brought in the first season mysteries.
All that stuff too.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's where you sort of look at Rob and say, you know what, you know better than me, because a lot of those things they happen in the moment. You know, Harry Hamlin, we need you back for an episode. Well, Harry, you know, says he doesn't want to come back for anything less than 4 episodes. Okay. Well, then we're going to have to deal with that. We're going to have to find another storyline. It wasn't what we were intending. But what a great idea, you know. So you're working, you're open to everybody. Everybody's collaborative input. That's what makes him great.
His character's resolution was great for the audience.
Wasn't it so satisfying?
Yeah.
So smarmy. What a brilliant man, but I just love listening to him talk. smart man. Yeah, but when he died, I didn't lose any sleep. You can even tell, like, in Keith's reaction when he asked Veronica, so how's Logan taking the, you know, whatever. It was sort of like, thank God. I don't know, bites the dust.
I think Logan was relieved as everybody else.
Yeah, but Logan, oh boy. Talk about the weight of the world.
You don't want your daughter dating him, right?
You know what? If he's loyal and true.
Okay, so how does it feel to be surrounded by all the young actors? You're the...
It's really weird.
Not used to that, are you?
No, not at all. Because because I have admiration for them, you know, the talent. So when they sort of look up to you and say, what do you think of this? I go, I'm a kid, too. I don't know. And then you have to rewind and go, oh, yeah, I'm Papa. I'm a young Papa, but I'm still Papa compared to them. I'm like what George Segal was to me.
See, that's what I had down here. Do you feel like George Segal now?
In a lot of ways. But George has got the greatest stories in the world. You know, George's story include, you know, everybody. Say, George, what was it like, you know, hanging out with Larry Olivier? It was all right. It was quiet. Wow. Good old George.
He's pretty youthful himself, though.
And we're born under the same star sign, astrological sign, so I hope and pray that I am as youthful and as happy as he is his age.
You think at your age you'll still be doing television? You think there will be television?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It'll be on little things like that, but... Yeah, TV's great. TV's fun. And it satisfies my blue-collar work ethic. Get to go to work every day. Movies would be great, but then there would be way too much time off in between.
And you'd get nervous.
I get nervous. Even if the money's in the bank, it's just, I don't know how anybody can just do, you know, I'm going to do one picture. Yeah, you make like $90 million in that one picture. You don't need to work. But my mind would rot. I need to go and dig my ditches. I need to go bang a nail every day. Need that. And TV gives it to you. And I've been really fortunate because it's one show after another show after another show. Even Hope and Glory was like 35 episodes, which was like a year and a half of steady work. And now we're going for 3 years on this thing.
Are you surprised?
No. Yeah, right. No, because we are truly the right show at the right time for the UPN and the CW. If we were on CBS or NBC, we wouldn't have lasted a season.
But
wouldn't have.
You think there's sort of a prestige project for them?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's why we have them, that clout, the press and the loyal fan base, even if it's a tight 4 million. You know, they're so there.
And organized.
And organized. And that whole banner thing is just like, that's enough to make Don Ostroff go, I love this show as much as you guys do, she's thinking. So yeah, that's all I need. Yeah, we're not making, you know, 10 million people aren't watching us, but you've got to weigh that into account. It's not on a big time network. And now the CW is going to cover like 97% of the market that the UPN didn't, so.
How much was UPN? Do you think maybe 70%?
Maybe 70%, yeah.
so that doesn't give you a chance really to climb up the ratings, does it?
No, it doesn't. Even in San Diego, you couldn't get the UPN unless you had like a certain cable subscription. So that's why I never watched it, because I couldn't get it in my hotel room or where I was staying. It's like, oh, they don't have the UPN. What is that about?
I remember that with the Sci-Fi Channel for a long time. You could never get that.
Couldn't get it.
When they first started out.
But UPN's supposed to be in networks.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, not anymore. So are they going to continue to film down in San Diego?
Oh, yeah. That's the only chink in the armor, I think. If it could film in L.A., it would just be so wonderful. Everybody would be so happy.
So now would be the perfect time to move up, because she's going to college now. You can change all the sets.
I understand. It's just, it's still not a runaway hit.
And it's cheaper to do it in San Diego.
So much cheaper. They save, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars every episode just by filming in San Diego. $500,000 an episode, they said.
What do you think the CW will expect from Veronica Mars next year? Much increased ratings, or?
You know what? I think they'll expect everything they've been expecting. Hold on to Gilmore Girls, because that's really their flagship show. And if we do as well as them, maybe even build on them, you know, especially in that key demo, which they love so much, that 18 to 34.
They do get that demo, though.
They sure do. Yeah.
Can I get the thumbs up?
It's a slow camera.
It is. This thing's like the old 1800s where you gotta, okay, hold, freeze, 30 seconds, don't move. You know.
Big plates.
You mentioned before that you were directing a play.
Yeah.
Is directing something?
It is now.
You enjoy doing?
But not on television.
Different.
Those guys are whips. They're right brain oriented. You know what I mean? They're just like efficient and organized. And I'm like, what do you think of this? And what about that? Yeah, that's good. We could do that. And all of a sudden, there's a producer over my shoulder going, "We're four setups behind." I was like, I would lose it. But theater. Or a film where there's time to nurture and watch things organically evolve. It's great. It's great.
So is this the first play you've directed?
Yeah. Like my first play outside of an acting class.
And what's it called?
Well, the theater company is the Echo Theater Company, and every year they do a series of one acts. And we commission playwrights that we're quite fond of to write new one-act plays. And this year the theme was an outdoor park or a backyard. So we got 8 playwrights who wrote variations on that theme. Mine was a 7-minute piece called Hartshorn, which is about two extremely conservative teenagers who are looking to break out of their sort of social restrictions, and they become Satanists. So they decapitate their dog, and it starts right at the end of the decapitation, where they're going, "What did we just do? What happened? This is for Satan." Oh, right, okay. Because we, you know, it's very funny and very dark, and it's exactly what I like.
Funny and dark.
Dark and funny. Dark and funny. Dark and funny. Dark and funny.
Yeah, Veronica Mars has a little of that too.
It really does, right?
Yeah.
Especially that pilot. I really like that pilot. And the original pilot was so much, so darker and seedier. I mean, the opening shot in the original pilot, before we changed it, was her taking pictures of you know, of a John in a motel room. You know, and then the episode they showed was like she was in school and in classroom. But that opening shot at the beginning was just like, oh my God. And where they live was just so clearly on the other side of the tracks, where the pool was just dirty and it was just like a small apartment, and that's where they lived. And Les Moonves says, we can't have that. We gotta feel like she's taken care of, like her father can take care of her. So suddenly we went up the social ladder a little bit.
It's still though, in some of the scripts, there's still the lines like they're living in a little more poverty than it appears they are.
Yeah. Because where the exteriors of that apartment building is in Pacific Beach, and it's beautiful and very expensive. It's right on the water. It's pretty great.
There aren't a lot of really cheap apartments in California, right?
No, not anymore.
Do you think having been the TV father of a TV teenager that you're going to be better at being a father to your own daughter when she gets to be a teenager?
Because I feel that who I am, I sort of lend to Keith. I don't think he was necessarily written that way, but I love Kristen and I respect her, and I love my kids and I want to respect them. So it does give me an opportunity to sort of see how it feels. To look at a daughter and know that she's like doing things you don't really want to know. But you give her enough rope to hang herself and you know that you're going to be there when she needs you. That's the only thing I can hope for as a dad. That when they are in trouble, that they'll come to me. Not to stop them from getting into trouble. I just don't want them to hide it. I want them to be able to come to me when they fuck up. Come to me when they...
Not to fear to come to you.
Huh? Not to fear to come to me. That would be the greatest achievement I can hope for as a dad.
Some of the, I think the best scenes in Veronica Mars are those where you have those discussions with her.
Right. I love those scenes. When I get to work with her, it's usually in a chunk. It's like the whole day, because we do all the interior of Mars apartment, Mars investigation stuff all one day. It's great. It's great. It's like home. And then there are those odd days where we're on location and I'm working with somebody that I'd never met, and it's like, ugh.
Not as easy
when it's cold and you gotta, like, you know, jump out of a window and stuff.
Well, you did that well.
Yeah.
Now, they made you do that yourself. They didn't have a stunt guy for that.
Oh, for sure. It was like, cut. Oh, my God. Coat over my shoulders. All right, action. Great. Good job, Rico. I love it when they pat me on the back.
After.
Thanks.
Some guys.
Thanks. Good job, Rico. Shut up.
Yeah, there was a lot of action in that scene.
Yeah. Rod, the guy who plays Liam Fitzpatrick. I'm looking. I actually saw the one episode where he was about to beat the shit out of Veronica. Remember that one? And I go, motherfucker, who is that guy? So intense and so mean. Oh, fuck. And then when I realized I had to fight him, I go, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And I'm in the dressing room and I see him and I go, uh-oh. And he looks at me and goes, you remember me? I go, oh. I'm Rodney from New York. Rodney? You're like a skinny little fucker. Back in New York. He goes, yeah, I bulked up a little bit. But it turns out, I've known him way back in New York. We used to hang out all the time in New York. And what a joy to, like, have that connection with somebody that you're supposed to hate. Because I'm not one of those actors who, like, needs to hate somebody in order to hate them. I need to really feel safe with them. I really need to trust them, and then we can get up and say, hey, thanks, bro. Thanks for holding me up. Thanks for you know, making eye contact with me. Thanks for keeping it safe. Thank God, because that's intense when you got to fight somebody.
Also made it much easier for him to give that performance to.
Yeah, right. But he would do that anyway. He's that kind of actor. He's just like, hate you. I'm laughing. Action. This is so funny. Because as a kid, you know, I would embrace that whole method thing of like, boom, bang my head up against the wall. And then thank God for Yale was like, you mean I don't have to do that anymore, Earl?
Isn't it easier to just act?
Just pretend. Cowboys and Indians. Our teacher at the time, Earl Gister, had just lost his voice box to cancer. So when I met him, he was like, bop, 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 bop. For some reason, I thought that would make him deaf. So I kept talking louder. Hey, Earl! Not deaf. It took me a while to adjust. Do you have talked to somebody with a voice box?
I used to work at Radio Shack, and they had a customer come in asking for parts. And that was tough.
That was tough, right?
Yeah.
You really have to hear it a lot to know that they're being articulate.
Yes.
But that initial shock of like, what did you say? The twang is just like, bang, 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 like those whatever they're called.
It's like the early versions of Cybermen.
Sorry, keep going.
Do you have any other projects that you're doing?
Well, this one movie, Joaquin Cedillo, who's the director of photography on Veronica Mars, he and his partner just wrote this movie. And he's going to film it, and his partner's going to direct it. And this is the movie I'm going to do this summer with Steven Weber. And another person I know is there. But that's coming up in June. And then I go back to work in July, and I just finished directing the play. And I've been writing a lot.
What are you writing?
I'm writing something that started off as a novel, ended up being a play, and is now a screenplay. Because my intention was to write a screenplay, but I'd never written a screenplay before. So I just sort of wrote because I did that. Remember The Artist's Way? You know that book? It's a wonderful book.
Julia Cameron?
Yeah. So, you know, I do my morning pages, and I go, this is so much fun. That's what I need. I'm gonna write what I want to write, have a theme, and just sit at my computer and write 190 pages, and then just look back and see what the fuck I wrote. And I go, wow, this is what I wrote. And it was all on a theme of love, but of course it was dark and
funny
and really, really just like quirky and. But it was a novel. It was dialogue. It was 170 pages of dialogue and description, but it was a novel. Everybody who read it is like, dude, this is like impossible to film. You go, what do you mean? It's like, this, and I could see it in my head. I go, no, and that happens. And then you come in, tight shot. Is that, dude? You know, you zoom in, what's the problem? Dude, somebody's got to read it and understand what the fuck you're talking about. I go, oh, all right. So I went back, and then it was like a play. Because it was just like all these ideas and things, and it's like, what? No, dude. Simplify. One story. 12 different stories coming together. I go, but how do I do that? That's such a great story. He goes, that's another story. And I go, all right. So finally, I went back to Vancouver this weekend with all these notes from all these people who have written screenplays, and I go, well, this is what we got to do. So I think I finally got something about, well, of course, it's about an Italian man in Toronto, a young Italian boy trying to, you know, break loose, escape from the familiar
it's just a little biographical.
You know what? It's so biographical that I had to mess with it. I had to make shit up as I went on because I go, I can't fucking just write about it. Because I just left, you know? I got my letter of acceptance to the American Academy and I just went, see you later. It wasn't so hard for me, so I had to make it difficult for this guy. And it's really just fucked up what keeps him there. It's like, whoa. But I won't bother you with that. But I am. And I'm learning how...
It will be a film.
And I'm learning that, you know, because I'm sort of having a midlife crisis.
You're not there yet, are you?
I am there. Oh, I'm so there. Because what happened was I spent my all my life thinking, I want to be an actor. I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to go to school to be an actor. I'm going to study to be an actor. I'm going to be the best actor I can be. And I never expected that it would just... I mean, in hindsight, you realize, oh, shit, it kind of happened quickly. Because my 20s were in New York, and I just wanted to learn, and I wanted to school, and I wanted to study. And the minute I was 30, work started happening, and I go, oh, that's it. I got the brass ring. Now what do I do? And all these TV shows come, I go, well, TV's pretty good, but it's not what I really, really want to do now. And I was bored and miserable, and I hated just shooting, not the people, but I was just so miserable by the end because it was just 38 hours of just sort of waiting around. You got your one scene, you go, okay, and then you got to go, So in the middle of all the years of Just Shoot Me, I would make myself do like plays like Macbeth and Uncle Vanya, and I needed to do something that was just, you know, larger than myself. And with Veronica Mars, there's no time to do a play. There's absolutely no time to do a play. So I go, I got to do something. I got to figure something out. So I just started. And I go, ooh, what a wonderful life project to just watch this come to fruition. So that's what I am.
Yeah, even when you're working on Veronica Mars, you have a lot of downtime.
So much downtime, but not enough.
You have to be there.
Have to be there. A lot of waiting. Days off in between. I don't work every day like Kristen does. So there are chunks of days and sometimes, you know, a whole week where I've got nothing to do and I can't do anything else. I needed to find something fast. And reading just kept putting me to sleep, so I needed to get out. So this is the beginning of a new phase in my life where I want to create something that comes from me and just watch it become something else. So wish me luck.
There's a lot of opportunity right there.
I guess. I've never done it before. I feel like I'm in school all over again, which is so exciting.
And finding a seed, watching you grow.
Yeah. It's like, how do you do this, and how do you do that, and how do you raise money, and how do you get it distributed, and how do you do all that? I don't know. And I'm not particularly interested in being a producer or a screenwriter or a director, but I know that there's something I want to share. And I never, ever wanted to do that before. I always wanted to be an actor for hire. Hire, man. Yeah, I go to work. It's really weird to say, oh, I need to go to school all over again.
I'm taking a writing.
What are you doing?
Television writing class.
Are you?
Right now.
Are you? Tell me about it.
It's an online computer course given by one of the writers of Monk.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Have you written anything for Monk? Yes.
No. Half scripts. But I see from, you know, this class that there's a whole process you have to go through.
Sure.
It's not just write the script and you're done. You have to do a lot of steps before you get there.
A couple of the courses that, because I've just been kind of following remotely, is they say write a one paragraph description of the story. You know, a TV guide synopsis.
Right.
And then write a paragraph. Write a page.
I know.
Write the script.
I know. You know what? And I took a class like that, and I go, I can't do it like that. I have to start backwards.
And that's what you kept doing. And
right.
See, I have to, naturally, I want to write the whole script first.
Right, right.
And now I have to go backwards.
But that's the thing about TV. There's no time for that. They're so efficient and so organized, those writers. It's just, it's boring to me. I want to write like you write. Just vomit it out, and then mold it and shape it.
I occasionally do training classes in my
training.
Yeah. training. And
what do you train?
Computer.
Oh, nice.
Troubleshooting.
Oh.
And when I first started doing a virtual training class,
yeah.
I scripted out everything I'm going to say for the next
right.
8 hours.
Right.
And then eventually I learned to tailor it down to
right.
Concepts and ideas.
Concepts and ideas.
But, but yeah, initially I just wanted to write everything out. Working that same
yeah,
concept.
Yeah.
Just working backwards.
Yeah, working backwards. Beats me. Well, good luck with that.
Oh, thank you.
There's a staff writer on Veronica Mars that was a teacher up in Seattle. A librarian up in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
Right. You know, she just sent Rob a script and said, come on down, I'll hire you. And she's like, wow.
I'd love to do a spec script for Veronica Mars, but it, with the overarching mysteries, it's just so difficult to get anything in there that would
yeah.
make any sense within a
yeah, right.
text.
Yeah, right.
Piano.
But you know what? I don't think, isn't there a rule of thumb about not sending a spec script
to the actual show?
Yeah.
Yeah, because well, generally it's a mistake just because
right.
the writers of that show
right.
know the characters
yeah,
so well that
yeah. yeah.
it's going to look funny
right.
no matter what it is.
Right.
Okay.
Where are we? Projects.
Is there anything you'd love to do but you haven't done it yet?
Yeah, what I just said.
The writing.
The writing, and but that's the first step in the process. I want to, because it's my voice, I would like to experience life where it's my vision and not... And not, you know, making somebody else's vision happen. And I'm fine with doing that. Once in a while, I like to say, you know what, guys? Follow me. I'm good at following you. I'm good at, like, taking your words and making it into what you want. I got something now, too. Can you help me make it? And it's just a weird adjustment to make. But that's what I want to see.
Anything personal? I mean, of course, that's personal too. But.
This screenplay, and I know there are other stories. I know I want to write about my sister, who passed away when she was 10.
I was going to say, sister, I didn't know
yeah.
you had.
I was 6, and she was 10, and she passed away. And she was my greatest childhood memory, but I sort of want to flesh that out for myself. There are questions that I still have that I want to have answers to. So if I have to make the answers up in a story form, then I will. But there's something in that I need to explore. I don't know if it'll make a great story, but I need to do that.
Your favorite actor?
Oh, the obvious. Mr. De Niro, Mr. Pacino, Mr. Penn, you know, Paul Giamatti, who I went to school with, is still one of my favorite actors. He was then, he is now, you know what I mean? Paul was the kind of actor that would make you want to quit. You know what I mean? Because he was just so good at it. He was like, I can't do that. I'm
you don't think you have that effect on other actors?
I'm sure I do. In fact, we belonged to the Mutual Admiration Society while we were at school, but it was just such a thrill to watch him. Good actors, man.
How about an actress? Anybody you want to work with?
Well, Sigourney was just a great example of somebody who just, after so much time being in the business, still putting so much of her into it. I mean, I thought she was like a ditzy blonde. I really thought she was a ditzy blonde the whole time because she was just like that. And then Alan just did a movie with her in the summer. He goes, oh no. Because she was an autistic woman in this thing. Like, well, she was.
She's also a
she's
Yale
not
graduate.
The blunt, she sure is. And hated it.
Did she?
She hated it because I think she was a classmate of Meryl's.
And somebody else who wants to make makes you want to stop acting.
Exactly. But I think Sigourney was the black sheep of that class and was treated as such. Do you know what I mean?
Well, she came from a show business family.
Show business family.
Probably a little resentment there.
Maybe. I don't know. She really didn't get into it, but I just know, oh yeah, she goes, I hated that. They hated me and I hated them. It's like, whoa. Huh?
It's like she learned a lot.
Yeah. But, I really, well, you know, Whoopi's my favorite. Just to watch her.
You did that pilot episode?
The pilot episode.
Of her show?
Yeah. Because she's a real performer, you know. She's a performer. I wouldn't even classify her as an actress or a comedian. She's a performer. Which is all of it. Which is everything. She says, give me that hat. Let's put on a play.
Think of a Guinan hat.
A what hat?
Yeah,
her hat.
In Star Trek Next
Generation. Oh, Next Generation. Right.
That was a great character.
Oh, good. Yeah, funny.
Okay, what's your best professional experience?
My best professional experience was my first professional experience. My first real professional experience was NYPD Blue. Because that was the first time I felt that I was being respected for what I did. And they allowed me to do what I can do.
That was an incredible performance.
Oh, thank you.
Got him on.
Thank you.
Came from where else.
I've actually never seen NYPD Blue.
You haven't?
No.
And,
I hadn't either before. I watched it the day behind you.
When a guy like Dennis Franz comes up and says, you know what, this isn't working. Let's call Milch down and let's talk about this. Milch is coming down again. Milch is like, yeah, what do you want to say? Okay, that's good. Yeah, let's do that. It's like incredible.
That was very realistic for us.
It was crazy.
Yeah. And sort of like a feature length, because it is a two-parter.
Yeah, two-parter. It's great. And they treated you good, and you got to do good work, and you got to work with great people. Peter Boyle was an innocent. You know, there was another example of a guy who's been in it forever, still was so concerned about protecting the quality of his work.
Peter Boyle disappears into his parts.
He really does.
I know him, but if I watched a film and then come back and say, that was Peter Boyle?
Yeah.
He's one of those invisible actors.
Yeah.
But you have that talent, too.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you.
Some of your roles I wouldn't know unless I was specifically... In fact, I didn't for so long know that Mathazar was great.
True. Yeah. Mathazar was great. I miss him.
I heard some talk that it was a few years ago of a sequel to that.
Yeah, they've been talking about it forever. I think the original screenwriter wrote a sequel. I hope they don't. They can't.
It would be fun, but it's almost like past its prime.
Yeah. Yeah, and not only that, but they do it with every movie.
Yeah.
You don't even remember the first one anymore.
Yeah, like Austin Powers, I think it kind of...
Yeah, it's like now they're just one big blur. Was that one, two, or three? But if it was just one, it was just like, there it is, Austin Powers. I'm glad they didn't.
What was your worst professional experience? You don't have to name names.
No. You know what? And it's never a bad emotional experience. It's always what you're given within the time restraints and the limitations that you're given make it miserable. I remember doing a whole thing on Outer Limits. That was really a great thing to work on. But it was just one of those examples where it happened so fast. You didn't have time to catch up for what you were doing. You know, I'm my own worst critic, so when you don't feel like you're connected to what you're doing, you just want to slit your wrists.
That's the kind kind of worked for that character.
I think it did. Maybe it did.
Because he was kind of supposed to be disconnected.
He was, disconnected and stuff. It was just like, But no bad emotional experiences with, like, actors or directors or anything like that. It's just like I've been, like, the luckiest son of a bitch. No divas.
No plays that bomb.
Sure. You know, a bad review, but who cares?
So the reviews you don't care about?
In the moment, you kind of go, they didn't get it, or they got it. You know what I mean? I don't understand. I don't understand the critics' role in all this, because I think they misinterpret their responsibilities. A critic needs to understand an artist's intent before they can criticize it. If they don't get...
They don't usually follow that rule.
Well, but I mean, that's the only legitimate thing you can do as a critic. What is the artist's intent? Well, did we actually accomplish the intent or not? Don't bring your personal shit into it. Oh, I don't like this stuff because, you know, she had a high squealing voice and what is she doing? I give a shit about that. Judge something based on why we did it. Why are we doing this? Did we fail or did we achieve it? Yes or no? And nobody wants to do that. You'd have to be smart to do that. You'd have to do your research.
Worse in recent years, people just don't even know what's good, so how do they...
They don't. It's all a personal, one man's opinion, one woman's opinion, of what they're seeing.
Not applying a standard, really.
No.
There was one time Sarah Brightman, she sang, she did a show here, and the review of the critic, they said, why did she sing that song from the Titanic in French? It was horrible. And she sang in Italian. So the critics really just kind of pulled his pants down right at that point.
That's exactly.
They don't do their research or understand why.
No. It's like an emotional response to what they're saying. Suddenly that's legitimate.
Yeah.
That's worthy of print. And you're going to influence... I hope neither one of you are critics. But
just critics of the critics.
Yeah. You know,
well, it's an odd profession to choose, though, too, isn't it? I mean,
well, it is.
Don't do anything.
Yeah.
Occasionally a bad review can do...
It's like, imagine the karma you got coming.
Occasionally a bad review can get people to go see the show or something.
Yeah.
That doesn't always happen.
Yeah. But I couldn't criticize a sci-fi show because I don't watch sci-fi shows. You have somebody who understands the genre, who understands that, and you have them criticize that.
Or the reviews that came out on Phantom of the Opera, the film. Mm-hmm. I had a feeling they were written by people who had never seen the stage show or didn't like the stage show. Well, you're certainly not going to like the film, right?
Who does?
Why bother?
Who does?
Oh, yes, we did.
Well, I think you already know there was a particular experience that convinced you to go into the profession.
The profession was...
Something that made you leave Toronto.
And it was because, at the University of Toronto, I had discovered a drama elective where I felt like I was appreciated on some level. But somehow I was doing something that made people go, hey. And I had never recognized that in myself before. I didn't really grow up in an environment where people would acknowledge your good traits. You know, it was an Italian immigrant thing. You know, go to school, don't be seen, dream small, ask for little, keep your head down, and trudge ahead.
Were you good at that?
Sure. That's why I'm a good, I'm a good worker. I'm a good supporting actor because I can support. I can support your vision.
But what made you?
Well, then this class, like, oh, you mean I can actually experience and have a life of joy and fulfillment? You know what I mean? I can go learn something. I can expand my consciousness and see what the world really is. And it was scary.
It was pretty much on your own, too, right?
Yeah.
Your family wasn't supportive of this choice.
No.
How did it feel about it now?
The cool thing is that Veronica Mars is in Italy. You know, and up until now, they've sort of taken my word for what I was doing. Because Just Shoot Me was never there. And they'd seen little movies here and there, but now the whole family is sort of getting around the TV on Wednesday nights and watching Veronica Mars.
Is there maybe a little pride now? They can
a lot of pride.
Show their friends.
A lot of pride. Yeah, a lot of pride.
That's good.
Yeah, that is good.
So you recently became a U.S. citizen.
I did, and I'm really proud of that. Yeah. Although I like having both, but I love Canada.
You can just go back and forth there, however you like now.
I'm a lucky guy. Yeah. And it feels really, really good to be able to vote. Because I had just left at the time where it was a weird time. There was no election at the time I left in Canada. So I never got to vote until the last California that thing back in November.
Oh, the bond?
Yeah. That was the first time I ever voted.
Yeah.
So what do you miss most about Canada when you're here?
No matter where I go, no matter what I do, it'll always be home. And I'll always feel safe there. I'll always feel comforted by the people and just the air. And sure enough, every time I land in Canada, it's like I feel a sense of relief. And I can relax. Here, it's all about, I gotta do this, I gotta do that, I gotta go. And in Canada, it's just like,
the pace is much slower.
It's much slower. There's still ambition in Canada, and people work hard. But there's just a reminder of where I'm from. This is where I really, really belong. I was born here. That's what my dad did, you know. When he retired, he moved back to his home. I wouldn't be surprised if at 65, my kids are off. Go back to Canada.
Well, it'll be an hour and a half.
Have you been over to Italy a lot then to visit your parents?
Once a year. Go once a year. Yeah, my kids need to know where they're from too.
So is that unusual experience when you're over there, or does it that feel like home too?
No. Not home at all. It takes me 2 weeks just to get the language back.
So you speak fluent.
Yeah, but 2 weeks of just getting your brain around what you're saying. And then by that time I have to leave. It never felt like it was home.
But you did grow up speaking Italian.
Yeah, every day.
Because your mom didn't speak English?
No English. My dad's English was broken.
Did that make school more difficult for you?
You know what? It didn't, because we grew up in an Italian neighborhood. Everybody was Italian. The teachers were Italian. The priests were Italian. All my friends were Italian and had Italian immigrant parents. Stores were in Italian. My mother lived in Canada for 30 some odd years and never had to learn English. So it was like everybody was struggling with the language. Everybody was coming to terms with it. So it was just like normal.
So did you have like a trace of an accent for a long time?
Or? Just my oats and boots. My stories. Poor story. Grandma.
You're full.
Asta.
You're full.
That's about it.
You're full.
What are you guys going to do today?
You go to your class.
What class? Screenwriting? The
Yeah. The only time I jump in is when she has to watch an episode.
Oh, yeah, so.
But you haven't caught him up on Veronica Mars yet.
No, I haven't. I'm having a hard time with that.
I think you'll like it.
I'm sure.
I'm going to wait for the second season to come on DVD and just watch it in one weekend because I've seen two episodes all year. Mm-hmm. That's great.
I tend to resist against watching it because I get hooked on it. And when I get hooked on it, I get really hooked on it. So.
That's what we need.
Yes. And that's why I don't watch television.
Yeah.
If I start watching The Sopranos,
that's pretty funny.
Wednesday night's going to come along and I'm doing something and I can't watch it. I'm fucked.
See, that's what TiVo is for. So you can just watch anytime you want.
I try the TiVo thing. Suddenly I come home at midnight and I've got 20 shows that I need to watch. I go, fuck this.
Somewhere you need to put life on pause and watch TiVo for 20 hours.
Yes,
and
then you've got like 20 shows you got to catch up on. I go, come on. So better not to know what's out there instead of risking missing two or three episodes and then going.
And then there are shows I'd like to watch that get canceled before I actually get there.
I wanted to watch
Deadwood. Now I hear
it's coming back. It's coming back. Yeah, yeah. Seth, thank you for articulating that for me because that's exactly what it is. The addiction of it. And you know, I can't fulfill that addiction. I can't satisfy that addiction. I can't promise the Sopranos people that I can be there at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, and I know the Sopranos would totally fall in love with that.
But, yeah. But I've avoided that on purpose. Because I've seen little episodes.
Mars. He's avoiding it.
Yeah, no, you are avoiding it.
That's what it is. Because I know I'd get it.
Yeah. Because I saw one episode of The Sopranos decision and I'm like this. Oh my God. The images and. It was like when Tony Soprano was going through heaven, like, but the door, that party. Remember that one?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, my God. I was exhausted watching it. It was so exhilarating. And I go, I can't watch this. I can't put myself through this. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go to the airport.
Valerie shaving.
Where are you going?
Back to Los Angeles.
Yeah. You see? So you were just here for a couple days?
I came, to tell you the truth, I was in Vancouver, and I blew my friend off at his graduation. Who graduated from law school. Because of our play. Because I couldn't come to his graduation, and I promised him that I would come back this summer. So I knew that my layover was in San Francisco. I said, okay. So I saw him last night, and then I wanted to meet you. So I'm glad it happened. Yeah. And Forrest, who you've been in contact with, is starting a website, like an official website, that I'm hoping we can put a link to you.
Oh, sure.
That's all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Forrest, came up from Wood. He's like a sound guy, is that right?
He's a sound guy. He wants to be a manager. You know, so he's sort of managing my life.
How's he doing?
He's, you know, he's still a 26-year-old kid who'd rather sleep in and stuff. But he's doing fine. He's doing fine. And he's really a whiz with the computer stuff and the sound stuff.
And we may see you later today if you were going.
So yeah, that's all right with you.
That's great. Okay, I'm out of questions. Anything
you like
to ask? I'm a little disappointed that nobody came to take an order.
Oh, that's true. They never came back.
Never came.
That's breakfast.
Never came. Let me see. I'll get a check.
Actually, I do have.
Who's that? What you got there?
It's signing time.
Would you get off?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know where
very underwhelmed to me.
Look at that. Was this from Comic Con or something? Channel 9. What was that? UPN 9. When we were in San Francisco. Yeah. Were you here?
No. I wasn't.
Alright.
I think this is from them in like Minnesota. A fan there picked it up, but she couldn't get it out. And that one is a friend of mine down in LA. The
Writers' Circle.
That was Paley Festival.
Yeah, that was a Paley
Festival.
Main rescue.
Do you get enough time to watch all?
Yeah, I'm
working in.
Because there's one game at a time, you know. Yeah.
Again, a friend in Minnesota sent me captured this.
Very cool. That's such a great picture.
A little blurry.
Okay, well,
nice.
And then it's going to be
recently.
Who took these pictures?
Somebody there at the hockey game, I guess. So.
Yeah, look at me slipping on all those pores wide open.
So we're going to check out now. We're not going to go behind that book. See you guys later.
So I'm wondering if I can get you to sign.
Oh, sure. Even these ones?
Yeah.
Let me do this one.
Yeah.
Probably the bottom is easier.
Yeah, there it is. Sir, could you get me a server?
Yeah.
Thank you. Is this yours?
Yes.
T-E-R-E-S-A?
Got it.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I think that was the first DVD I ever bought. It's the Galaxy Quest.
You got that one in New York, didn't you?
Or no, you brought it in San Francisco.
Okay, you brought it with us. Yeah. Okay, it's the first one I saw of it. Before I had watched the laser. I had the laser disc of it. God, that's so long ago. So did they pull you together to do the alternate audio track on that, or did they do that separately?
What's the alternate audio track?
It's in Thermion.
It's in Thermion?
The whole script. It's so funny, just listen.
Yeah, I can only get through 20 minutes of that.
You gotta be high.
Oh, there you go.
Thermion, what a stupid idea.
Here, I can put that back for you.
And you want me just a signature, or
yeah,
you have to push
it?
Yes, I'd like a glass of water and the check, please.
Okay.
Just uh-huh. Signature.
Yeah, just signature sign.
What am I seeing? Shocker.
What's that?
I don't know. My hands look like Shocker.
I haven't seen you play. Are you very good?
No.
No.
But I care a lot. So, you know, we get to play with a lot of the pros or former pros.
Okay.
Not good at all. But they admire my blind effort to just kind of go head first.
And what position do you?
You know what?
Just whatever.
Yeah, defense, forward, whatever they, wherever they want me. Because growing up, again, because of the immigrant mentality, I would end up watching Canadian kids playing hockey. So just again, I was like catching up to them. They were starting. They were skating when they were four or five years old. And I didn't start skating until I was like 9, which is already too late. Already too late. Huskies.
It's like a double autograph here.
Right.
Have you met Wayne Gretzky?
Funny story. No, I haven't. But Nancy, my ex-wife, was Janet Jones's best friend. And Janet Jones married Wayne Gretzky. So here I am dating this woman who was at their wedding, who knew Wayne intimately, you know, not biblically, but she was the wife's best friend. But they had just had a falling out, like maybe a year before I had met her. And I went, go make it up to her. Go say you're sorry. So no, I never got the chance. Plus Alan Thicke was very good friends with him. You know, we sort of missed the party that he was invited to. Can I make this one to you too?
Yes, you may. Isn't Gretzky in Arizona now?
Yeah, he's part owner of the Phoenix. Thank you very much. No, please come on. It's a darn. I was hoping you guys would make a breakfast.
Fabulous morning, thank you.
Such a thrill to meet you. Thanks for everything. I'll lock you up. Out.